101.3 FM, KRNG Fallon, Reno, Fernley, Sparks, Nevada, and surrounding Biggest Little Radio presents the Rural Report with Robert Ray.
Hey everybody, a happy Tuesday out there to you. I'm Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter, and this is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio 101.3 FM and biggestlittleradio.com. And as we do every Tuesday, I have a studio guest here to talk with. But before we get into that conversation, I just want to give a quick update. If you're wondering why you hadn't heard any update about the incident at Wigwam Tuesday night where a person was shot during a robbery, that's mainly because the Lyon County Sheriff's Office has not released any additional information since Friday. So there has been no update to provide. Just to recap the situation that we do know, two men dressed in dark clothing with masks attempted to rob the store. A customer, I don't know if it was a man or a woman, a customer was shot, taken to a hospital, was treated and released. And there was another employee who had a medical condition at the same time and was hospitalized also. The two suspects, as I mentioned, they were listed as two males wearing dark clothing and masks, and they left in a black car. And that was all the information we've been given, and we've so far received no update from the Lyon County Sheriff's Office. So if you're wondering why you hadn't seen an update, it's because they haven't given us any additional information. So that's the latest we do have. And if there's anybody out there who does have any information, obviously call the Lyon County Sheriff's Office, the non-emergency line at 463-6620, or call Secret Witness at 775-322-4900. And there is a $2,000 reward for the arrest and prosecution of these two individuals. So please, if somebody knows something, maybe you can help break this case loose. In the meanwhile, here in the studio, our guest today is a longtime friend and longtime co-worker of mine, and for a short time was even my boss, Laura Tennant from the Dayton Valley Historical Society. So thanks for coming in.
Oh, thank you for having me, Robert. Gosh, I haven't seen you in so long. Yeah, we used to work together, and I missed him when we all went our separate ways. So I'm glad to be here.
So I worked with Laura in the Dayton office of the Leader Courier, which is the publication along with the Mason Valley News. That was way back in the day before the Reno Gazette Journal purchased a paper, and it was a family-owned operation. We had a lot of fun, but even back in those times, you've been involved with the Dayton Historical Society. So what is the Dayton Historical Society?
Oh, we're the Historical Society of Dayton Valley. And our mission statement is to preserve Dayton's history, and that's not just written history, but the buildings and all type of the integrity of Dayton's history that has been lost for so many years. When Virginia City's gold was discovered there, Dayton had been in the loop since 1849, where Nevada's first gold was discovered. However, when the Comstock load, the big silver strike, almost everybody left Dayton, and it was kind of a lost in the shadow of the Comstock load, the history. So there's so much of it that has been gone and myths, and so our goal is to get that history out there, and that's my goal. I love the early history, and that's what I love doing.
So partly, as you said, the Comstock load was, obviously a bigger attraction, and it drew everybody to leave and go up there, and then Mark Twain came and made it famous, and that's probably, Dayton didn't have its own Mark Twain.
No, we didn't have our, but he came down and visited Dayton. He even came down and visited Adolph Sutro, you know, who built the Sutro Tunnel. They had quite a conversation about the poor job the county had done to build the first bridge in Dayton. It was a Bolivar Roberts toll bridge, in about 1862, and it was built there. And they thought the government would have fouled everything up, so they had quite a conversation together. Yeah.
So, what talk about Dayton's being Nevada's first settlement? There's, you know, a lot of people come to northern Nevada and new and don't know maybe much about the area. So what is the historical significance of Dayton?
No, Dayton has a lot of historical significance in Nevada because we have Nevada's first gold discovery, which was in 1849. And that was at the mouth of Gold Canyon, which is quite close to the Carson River. And that is where the first gold was discovered. There, 10 years before gold or any kind of a strike was discovered on the up at the Comstock Lode. So, and then Dayton, there's the controversy, or historians have debated whether Dayton is older than Genoa, or whether Genoa is older than Dayton. And the way I look at it is, I've done a ton of research on it, and I think it's a matter of semantics. I like to call Dayton the earliest settlement in Nevada instead of town, because Genoa really was the first town. That's where the first Utah territorial government was founded. And that was in 1851. But as far as the settlement, there are a lot of different. It is a big semantics, seems to be the deal. It has to do with permanent settlement and what makes a permanent settlement. So people who believe Genoa has to be first says Dayton just had miners living in rock houses with canvas tents. And that might not be a permanent settlement. Where they had in 1851, they had eventually, about that time, they did get the Mormon Station was built, the fort out there. And so they say, okay, we were first. Well, then there's some other things that come in besides the semantics of what makes a settlement. And one of them happens to come in later years, in the last 15, 20 years, was the diary written by a woman named Lucina Parsons. And she came through Dayton and on her honeymoon, by the way, all across from Wisconsin to Missouri to Salt Lake City, where she and her husband spent a few months, where he earned money and went to work. And then they came on into Dayton, and they'd heard there was gold mining going on. This was in May, the end of May. They arrived at Gold Canyon, and I believe she was one of the first women who probably prospected for gold, because she went out with the men, was prospecting, and made pretty good money. Traded a cow for a nugget, and then later traded a nugget for a fresh cow, because that was important in those days to have milk. And so anyway, she kept a diary, and she wrote in that diary in May of 1851 that John Reese had just come through with his pack train from Utah, and he was on his way to find Genoa. And so we already had 200 miners in the canyon. And so everyone says, okay, we were 2 weeks older than Genoa. And so Genoa people say, no way, we're not. And so there's been a lot of then discussion on that semantic, is what makes a settlement. In the Motherlode country in California, the settlement happened when the gold was first discovered. That was it. Then they didn't care where they lived or how they lived, but that was called the first settlement. Plymouth Rock in Massachusetts, they didn't wait for somebody to build the house. They just said when the day the pilgrims arrived, that was the first settlement. So it is a matter of semantics, and I think that we could make fun of it if we could, but it's kind of hard on Genoa, because they were considered the first settlement, first town, etc., for ever since the beginning of recording the history. So Dayton's working on that all the time. So that's what it's all about.
You mentioned that coming to light just in the past few years. Was that diary just discovered that recently, or how did that come about?
That came about because of a man named Martin Griffith, and he worked for the Associated Press. But in his spare time, he loved hiking the immigrant trails, and he and his partner had been hiking the immigrant trail. And they came through Dayton, and they had their packs on, and they had hiked it all the way from the Nevada border to the north. And so we got talking about Dayton history, and as they were leaving, I said, you know, Dayton is Nevada's first settlement. And I had been raised with that. All the Daytonites, old Daytonites, said that was true, and they felt they knew that. And so I mentioned that to Martin and his partner, and later Martin did his research, and he tends to agree that we were the first settlement. However, that day, he looked at his partner after they walked away from me and said, I wonder what she's been smoking. And then later he did go ahead and do his research, and he found Lucina's diary. And that diary is, the original diary can't be found, but the diary transcript with information other than just the diary is at Stanford University. And it was, what we have in our possession at the Dayton Museum is the people who transcribed the diary has different information too, not just the diary. So the diary has been proven to be very accurate because Lucina had decided not to get emotional because she was, you know, she was scared. She'd heard a lot about the hardships on the trail. And so she mostly tried, although she did write some incidents that they had to experience. Death was one of them. But she had also documented the countryside as she went. And so today when they look at her diary, it's been claimed, oh, this wasn't true. She made it, somebody made that up. Well, no, even the Trail Association, California Oregon Trail Association, says it's an excellent diary. And so then, you know, her daughter actually found her diary in a trunk because she had rolled it up and tied it with rawhide and put it in a trunk. And she told her daughter, when her daughter said, Mom, why didn't you tell me about this? She said she never wanted to reread it again or remember the hardships on the trail. So that's where the diary came in, and Martin found that diary.
He found it in a museum?
No, he found, I thought, you know, and I'm not sure if where he found it, but he did come up with and see the importance of that diary. And then another diary by Lucy Cook, she came through in 1853, and she writes, it's a wonderful book, a little booklet on her, and she stayed in Dayton in 1853, and she said there were two log cabins and that her husband earned some money. They were always needing a little more money because it was expensive when they had started across the whole desert and plains to get out west. And they put most of their money into their outfits, you know, their wagons and everything. So anyway, she bathed her baby in the river there and stayed and worked at the log cabin there. And she also mentioned that Wells Fargo was delivering the mail then to people on the trail. And so she got a letter from her sister while she was there in Dayton. They stayed there for a month. So those are dates because they said, oh, that wasn't people. Well, there weren't people there during the whole 1850s. Well, we have excerpts that say that we had them there from 1949 onward. So that's it on that.
So one of the things I want to get into, you recently, just a year or a little more ago, published a book on Dayton history, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that and a little bit about the museum and just some more of Dayton's history. If you have a question, if this is piquing your interest at all, you can call us here at 775-404-1115, or you can get on the chat box at biggestlittleradio.com and type in a message to us. I'm talking with Laura Tennant of the Historical Society of Dayton Valley. So keep listening, and we'll be back right after a short message.
Follow the conversation on our chat box at www.biggestlittleradio.com. 1.3 Biggest Little Radio presents the Rural Report with Robert Gray.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter. This is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio 101.3 FM and BiggestLittleRadio.com. I'm talking with Laura Tennant of the Historical Society of Dayton Valley. You mentioned Dayton's history kind of getting lost, and I first came to Nevada in like the late 1980s, and I went to UNR for a year, and I had to take a Nevada history course, and unless I missed that day, I don't remember any discussion about Dayton at all, even being part of the course or the curriculum. And yeah, that's one of the things that I've heard you guys talk about, is that Dayton's history, you know, people don't realize the significance in that Dayton has had in the development of Nevada as a state. How did that happen?
Well, that's what's so interesting. I don't know how it just totally got dropped, because when you read the old books, it's there. It's all the history books have it there. But somehow, even in the Lyon County School District, or it would be the Nevada history books, and I think they're still teaching out of the same ones, Dayton is not listed. And our kids, one of my friend's grandsons was, you know, part of our historical society, and she was very active in it, grandmother. And he came home and he said, "Grandma, we're studying Nevada history and Dayton isn't even in there at all." So we did get the Lyon County School District to buy the book that was written by one woman. She came there in 1862, Fanny Hazlitt, and she wrote her memoirs all the time of 1862. And then they were published by the Nevada Historical Society, and they can be purchased, a little book can be purchased in Dayton at the Dayton Museum.
So you published this book about a year and a half or 2 years ago, and I'm holding my copy in my hands here. It's Images of America in Dayton, and there's so many great little anecdotes and photos in here. Where did all of this stuff come from?
This was from a collection of items that our historical society was formed in 1990s. And then the museum opened in 1994. And I worked then, of course, for the paper. I had my office, and I wrote a lot of articles about Dayton and Dayton's history and the formation of the Historical Society. And people then knew that I was gathering things. And so I just kept gathering. I was busy in the office. I didn't have much time. So people would bring me things, and I had a huge drawer there in a big chest. And I just opened that drawer and threw things in. And so that's where I first started collecting. And then at the museum, we had old-timers still left, and they had tons of old photos. And that's one thing that is really nice about Dayton's history, is the old-timers who kept the pictures from 1859, where families stayed there, like the Walmsley family. They never left. They're still members in Dayton now since 1859. And so we have so many photographs, I had the hardest time figuring out which ones to use. We printed 750, and we had much more. And then I had to choose 220 of the pictures to use in the book.
The information for the photos, most of the photos have a paragraph or two that describe. Did you have to do a lot of research to figure out what each photo was about, or did, when people gave you photos, did you already have that information and then just kind of have to pull it all together?
Well, that was just what was, you know, I thought, oh man, this will be simple. I have so much information. I had way too much information. And some of it wasn't easy to find, because I am not the greatest at filing. And so I did have to look a lot of it up. And sometimes we went online to find different things about different families, or I looked in old newspapers to find out about some of the early day businesses, because Dayton was a huge, busy place. And by 1860, there was no water in Virginia City. And without Dayton's water, the mills, I don't know, maybe the gold would still be in the ground on the Comstock. But they brought all the ore down to Dayton because of the lack of water up in Virginia City and Gold Hill. So that's where Dayton really got its start, was milling. And of course, by then, all the wood was brought up to Virginia City, and all the mills in Dayton. The mills all the way went from Dayton all the way down up the Carson River and then over to Carson City. It was booming. Teamsters, hundreds of teamsters, wagons, horses. There were 6 livery stables. And so just to look through all that information, and then Fanny Hazlitt's book that I talked about, she has a ton of that information in there too. So I was able to look at that information that she had given. And then Lyon County, we used to do reflections. You remember reflections? And I had done a lot in reflections, and I used that information. So it was difficult. It was a hard job to do what I wanted to do in the short time that they allowed me to do it.
So this wasn't a project that you just, you basically took it on spec then?
Yeah, I always had wanted to write a book, but I'm getting older, and I thought, you know, you're not going to do it on your own. And Arcadia Publishing is the biggest publisher of history books in America and the UK, and they had contacted me before, but we all thought we'd just do it ourselves. And then I knew that if I didn't go ahead and have, I'm a deadline person, so I needed somebody to give me a little kick in the rear. And so I said, okay, I'll do it. And that May, and then they wanted it by December. And I said, no, make it January. So it was a lot of work and took a lot more time than I had expected it to do. But I'm so glad that I did it. I have another one planned too, another book on Dayton Cemetery. So that should be coming out in a couple of years.
You're working on that right now?
Well, the lady that's helping do the research, Karen Howell from Dayton, is doing extensive research on everyone buried there. And her work is just amazing. And so we're going to work together on a book on that, what she's found in the Dayton Cemetery, which is awesome. Just awesome.
Yeah, I was really interested. You guys had a ceremony a couple of years ago because somebody was it her research that uncovered the fact that there was a Civil War soldier buried there?
No, she hadn't started yet, but that was I think Linda Clements said also, she's one of our members, and she has done a lot of research too. So that was her research, I think, that brought that out. A man named Carnell was the he was the first black. Well, he was black. Civil War veteran, and he came to Dayton, and then he is buried there. Right now at the Dayton Museum, I'm working on a veterans display case, and I'm trying to get as many veterans, all the names will be there that are buried in the cemetery. That's over 100, by the way. And every war, Spanish American, Civil War, Mexican War, all of them. And so I'm trying to put a display case together with some of their pictures and in the museum, and I hope to get that done soon.
Well, I know what you're talking about, but for some people who maybe don't know anything about Dayton's history, tell us a little bit about the museum and where it is and what you have.
Okay, our museum opened in 1994. It was a big challenge. It's an old Dayton grammar school, 1865 grammar school. It's the oldest school in Nevada, still standing at the same location, and it's the second oldest schoolhouse in Nevada, period. Everything in there is original. We had 150th celebration for the schoolhouse about a year ago, and next year, actually moving on from that real quickly, next year the community center in Dayton was a high school founded and opened in 1918, and we will have a 100-year celebration next year for that. But the old Dayton Grammar School is still amazing and standing, and that's where our museum is. And we have the whole history of Dayton is so diverse, that all the way from mining to milling to railroading to a cultural American Native Americans, Chinese, great Chinese culture. We're Nevada's first Chinatown. And just everything's represented in there, farming and ranching, all that in Dayton, because we were on the main immigrant trail from the beginning. And so it is so historic. It's just so sad that that history got lost. And I feel proud that I have worked as hard as I can to bring it up to date.
Are there still remnants of old mill sites and things located around Dayton that you can see to this day?
Yes, you know, the Dayton State Park, there's the one big Rock Point Mill there. They have the remnants that they've saved from it. It was actually one of the first mills ever built, and the Comstock was built there. The ore was brought down in a back road that I like to hike up, and anybody can hike up there to Silver City. It's a really nice hike. You start at where the mill was. There's a kiosk. It's a state, Nevada State Park put a kiosk up there. And so that's really a nice hike, and then you can learn about the mill from the kiosk. They have a pamphlet there and tells about it. But over the years, that site on the Rock Ridge, it's right on the ridge, and it was right on the river, and that that mill kept people employed. It changed hands. It was owned by the governor once. It burned twice, and the Herman Davis, the man who kept the jobs going in Dayton, kept it, and he is very important in Nevada history. He was the man who invented Nevada's first cyanide plant for processing tailings. So it's just so much history there. People should come to the museum, and we have a great walking tour, self-guided walking tour, and they can find out all those things there.
You mentioned somewhere towards the beginning of the show, you mentioned the name Adolf Sutro, but talk about his significance a little bit.
Well, Adolf Sutro actually built his first mill in Dayton. He was a Prussian, and he came over from Prussia. He's a Prussian. And he built a little mill right on the river there in Dayton, in what's near downtown Dayton. And he was making pretty good money, and then there was a fire there. And although he did have insurance on it, that's a kind of a nice story, but somebody was killed, and he was accused at that time of starting the fire to get the insurance money, but they never could prove it, so he got his $10,000, which I thought was pretty amazing for 1862. But he saw what was going on the Comstock, and the mines were in Virginia City were getting so deep that there was so much heat and hot water that some of the miners literally had to leave every so often and go into a ice chamber to cool off. And his idea was to build a 4-mile tunnel up to Virginia City and drain the hot water off so that the mining could continue. Well, that by the time he got the tunnel built, an amazing feat, engineering feat. Some call it the eighth wonder of the world. And their engineering then was just amazing. They really didn't have many instruments. But by the time he got the tunnel finished, there was a recession about then, and the price of gold and minerals was falling. And so it was a while before he knew that things were going to go down, and he got out as fast as he could, and he ended up with about $1 million that he ended up taking to San Francisco and building San Francisco's the Sutro Baths, and he was the mayor. So anyhow, he was very important in the Sutro Tunnel. That tunnel is not open. The tunnel itself isn't open, but it's also not open at the town. He built a little town there, and there were 750 people there. He planted one tree for every house. That was one of the things he did. And so he did a lot to change that Dayton Valley and all of the ingenuity that went on there. It's amazing. All that is amazing to read and study, and there are a lot of books. And there's a huge display at the museum on the tunnel, huge display with pictures, the engineering, designs, everything at the museum.
So we're just about out of time. Could you just quickly, if somebody wanted to take a tour of the museum or get a copy of your book, find more out about Dayton's history, how can they reach you or
well, they could call the museum? Yeah, they could call the museum at 775-246-6316, or the book's on sale there. The museum is open the whole month of May from 11 to 3, especially for Historic Preservation Month with the state. Normally, we're just open on Saturdays from 10 to 1 and 1 to 4, and Sundays on 1 to 4 only. So we're all volunteers. Everything we do is all volunteer. My book, all the proceeds from my book has gone back into the society to promote Dayton's and preserve Dayton's history. So that would be the best thing to do, or call me at 775-246-3256.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and thank you today for listening. I'm Robert Perea, publisher and editor of the Fernley Reporter. This is the Rural Report on Biggest Little Radio, 101.3 FM and BiggestLittleRadio.com. Thank you.